Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Well, welcome on into another edition of the Boston Celtics postgame show. Kind of a dagger in the heart today with where we stand here. Brandon Knight, man. What can you say? Brandon Knight. A guy who, let's be honest, a lot like Damian Lillard in the Western Conference, got snubbed in the East. You can make the case he might not have gotten snubbed. It's not quite his year. But the guy, he shut it down tonight. I mean, when it looked like the Celtics were coming back, when it looked like they were going to make that run and maybe win the game.
The ball doesn't lie.
I mean, you really can't. You really can't go around the fact that Brandon Knight just completely ended it. And Jay Crowder's shot at the end there was a little bit rough. We got Mike Munger here. Mike, how you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, man? I gotta say, you're a little more gracious of the kind of player Brandon Knight is. Let me just say this: it was a good shot, so I'll give him credit for making the shot, but it's like anytime Avery Bradley isn't guarding the other team's go-to guard, you know something bad is going to happen. The minute I saw the switch happen where Brandon Bass ended up on Brandon Knight, I put my face in my palm and I just knew. Because Avery Bradley, you know, had him on lockdown, and then there was the pick and roll, and it was a switch, and then Bass got the jumper right in his eye. And I mean,
what? And the interesting thing is it wasn't just Avery Bradley and a couple other guys that were guarding. I mean, you also had Tayshaun Prince on Brandon Knight. There were a bunch of guys on Brandon Knight tonight. And like you're saying, you know, I mean, I maybe Brandon Knight's not an all-star material yet, but he's starting to get there. And with where the Milwaukee Bucks have you know, kind of arranges himself right now, especially with the injury of Jabari Parker, which has been a while, but, you know, considering it, you gotta kind of take your hat off to Brandon. I know he made a great shot tonight, but he has kind of developed into the, like you said, the go-to guy for Milwaukee. Definitely. I agree with you there. Avery Bradley's defense has been outstanding for most of his career. And like you said, Brandon Knight absolutely just shut it down. And I mean, like I was saying, the fourth quarter was brutal because, I mean, going into about 6 minutes left in the ballgame, about 9 minutes left in the ballgame, the Bucks made a 6-0 run to make it 90-81. And then the next thing you know, the Celtics make this slow, methodical run where their defense was actually quite impressive. And, you know, obviously the Bucks missed a couple shots from time to time, but the Celtics defense on the whole did relatively well late in the ballgame. I mean, they gave him a chance. I mean, they went on a 10-2 run, making it 92-91, 3 minutes to go. You know, 2 minute timeout for Milwaukee. Henson gets the hook in the lane. And then the next thing you know, the Celtics really, I mean, blew their chances late in the game with a couple of bad opportunities. I mean, they had a horrible shot in the corner right after that Henson hook. And then Solinger had a straightaway three, which just clanked off the right side of the backboard. And then Boston got the ball back again for a third chance. And that was when they called timeout. They got Jay Crowder going in for the lane, a goaltend layup, make it 94-93. And then that's when Brandon Knight pulled it from the bottom of the deck. Fade away from the far left, 96-93, game, set, match. What were your thoughts on the game, Mike Munger, as a whole? I mean, I just broke down the fourth quarter, but what did you see from an entirety perspective of this game?
Well, it's funny because both teams were trying, you know, on the second night of a back-to-back, both teams were traveling as part of the second night of a back-to-back. So I was expecting it to be a little sluggish, but it looked like whenever the intensity picked up by either side, then that's when each team went on their run. I mean, Milwaukee, when in that second quarter is when Milwaukee kind of put their stamp on the game. They just completely outplayed the Celtics as far as hustle and energy. And that's when they kind of gave themselves enough of a cushion where it didn't come back to bite them in the butt at the end of the game. But then you saw guys like Marcus Thornton, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, even Tayshaun Prince a little bit, Jay Crowder. When the energy levels picked up, that's when the Celtics went on their run. So, I mean, I thought that despite that missed three at the end, I thought Jarrett Sullinger played a really good game. Defensively, I thought Avery Bradley played a pretty good game, because if you go back and watch most of the points that Brandon Knight did score, I think he had one 27-foot jump shot where Avery Bradley was kind of in the vicinity, but other than that, he did most of his damage than anybody else. But Bradley's defense was as elite as it always is. Marcus Smart, you know, he had his good moments and his bad moments. I mean, there was that one three-play stretch where two layups in a row given up by Marcus Smart, and then the turnover that led to the dunk, and that little 6-0 run that you mentioned in the fourth quarter. That was kind of that moment where you just started to feel the game slip away a little bit. But I thought Marcus Smart played pretty well. I thought the defense was still pretty good despite the five fouls. I mean, you don't want to get mad because second night of back-to-back and the guys are tired, and you could tell, like, you know, a guy like Avery Bradley, who's probably our best shooter, you know, 4-for-15, and a lot of them were short, especially in that fourth quarter. He just looked like he was gassed. And just the fact that he had to use so much energy on the defensive end, you're kind of on the overlook that. But then, I don't know, they weren't making their normal shots tonight. They shot 29 threes, which is a little frustrating when realistically they could have easily gotten to the basket a lot more, because I don't necessarily consider Milwaukee's backcourt defense to be a strength of theirs with Brandon Knight and Jared Dudley or Chris Middleton. And even with Giannis and Henson, they're long and athletic on the inside, but they're not exactly guys that are going to stop you from getting where you want to go if you're just a little physical and use some muscle and size with them. So I thought we should have attacked the paint a little bit more than we did. So, I mean, good, fun game, entertaining. I'm sure that the tanker crowd will be happy that we played well and lost. You know, I'm of the mindset that I want to see this team make the playoffs regardless if it's the 8th seed, 7th seed. I don't care. I want to see this young group get the playoff experience that they need moving forward. So I was hoping for the win. It was an entertaining game. I still don't like Evan Turner. I still think we need to trade him more than anybody else, or just bench him and move on from there.
You know, you made a couple of points there that I want to get to. You know, you talked about how both teams came out sluggish. And if you want to call in, the phone number is, well, I had the phone number here for a second. The phone number is 347-215-7771. Again, if you'd like to call in, 347-215-7771. If you have any comments on the game, would like to talk about the game, feel free to call in. We'll get you on the hotline as fast as possible. But you brought up a couple points there that I wanted to hit upon. That, I mean, you said that you figured both teams would come out sluggish. I really started picking up on the intensity of this game, like you were saying, you know, around the fourth quarter. Before that, though, I felt, especially in the third quarter, both teams played relatively sluggish altogether. I mean, you can make that the case for most games in the NBA on a regular basis, that the third quarter is kind of an adjustment period quarter where everything, you know, things that happened in the first quarter, first period, two periods, you can make the case that going into the third quarter that, you know, both teams are trying to adjust. Maybe they're just getting their feet underneath them for the second half. all that kind of stuff. But both teams looked relatively sluggish altogether in the third quarter. And again, like you said, after a back-to-back, to me it looked like this is one of those games, you know, game number 50 in the regular season. We're a week away from the All-Star break. Both teams just looked absolutely exhausted. And on top of that, like you said, after a back-to-back, it looks like in the third quarter, at least, both teams were dragging to get into the to the All-Star break along with that. Also, speaking of guys, Evan Turner, you brought up a great point about Evan Turner. I was baffled at certain points in this game, and I understand it's because the Celtics are trying to figure out a way to adjust this roster to get the best pieces to fit as possible. But the odd thing for me, and this has happened on multiple times this year, this hasn't just been a new development. This has been a thing that's been going on for over a month now that at least I've seen through looking at box scores and looking at things. And the guy has played well at the position, but Evan Turner has been playing at the point guard position relatively frequently this year. I don't know if that's a normal thing, a regular thing in Boston, but to me it's rather interesting because, I mean, watching this guy in college, which again was a while ago for those of you listening, you know, if you've been following the Celtics or just following basketball in general for a while, Evan Turner, when he was in college, he was one of those guys that was a small forward, maybe a shooting guard from time to time. This guy never played the point. He wasn't a point guard type material guy, and to see him playing at the point is fascinating to me because you would never think that this kind of guy would come out and play this position. You made another great point real quick before I let you get back to what we were saying. Marcus Smart had some moments of just spectacular play. You know, he's clearly a young player in the league, 13 points tonight. And he looked great. And again, late in the game is where he shined. And again, over time in the future, Marcus Smart is going to improve. If there was one guy out of the draft this past year that I really wanted to see and see what team he'd go to, it was Marcus Smart. This guy should have come out maybe after his freshman year in college at Oklahoma State. Everyone was ready to see him come out of college and play well. And the guy has obviously been a part of a team building process there in Boston as a new kind of thing that they're setting up with Brad Stevens, obviously, but the guy is gonna flourish. You give this guy a couple, maybe even give him one off season with a bunch of NBA players. I mean, obviously he had that last year in the summer league, but give him another off season here. Let him develop a little bit more. This guy is gonna be a superstar in no time. Maybe not a superstar, but definitely a guy that you can lean on as a key contributor, as a starting role player. Huge key contributor as a starting role player. I mean, the start of night, as we know, Brandon Knight, 26 points. The guy was fantastic. And I'm in the same boat as you. I want to see this Boston Celtics team get into the postseason this year. I don't care what everyone's saying about Brad Stevens and that, he's not the coach and blah, 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 all this stuff. The thing that I'm fascinated with and seeing in the future is seeing this Boston Celtics team grow over time. And even this year, they've got four technically, but they had about three or four teams in their way, one team in Detroit who might go in with Boston, but Miami, Brooklyn, and Charlotte, those three teams are legitimate. That you can pick from them and get past them right now, especially considering they're only Boston's only three games out of a playoff spot, two games out of a playoff spot right now heading into the All-Star break. They've got more than an opportunity to get into the postseason and have a chance at potentially, you know, buying their way in, maybe being an 8 seed. Yes, they play a team like Atlanta, which would be goodness. You talk about Atlanta, what, 35-3 the last 38 games. They have been absolutely on just white hot, absolutely insane fire streak right there by them. But also, I mean, let's not kid ourselves with this Boston Celtics team. I mean, sorry, not Boston Celtics, this Milwaukee Bucks team. This team is fascinating to me, the Milwaukee Bucks. This team came in, you know, before last night when they lost their first game in four, and they went four of the last five, and then coming into this one, now they've won five of the last six. Milwaukee has been outstanding. They have been a team that has played outstanding defense all year long with Jason Kidd without a real go-to guy. I mean, Jabari Parker is supposed to be that guy, and I'm assuming going into next year he's going to grow into that role of being the go-to guy on the offensive side of the ball. But Milwaukee honestly, in the way Boston's built, these two teams are similar, are built in a very, very similar fashion. And if you look at the way Boston is built and the way that Milwaukee's built, you can make the case that the only real difference between the two is that maybe the coaching styles have suited each team differently. I understand the uproar of Brad Stevens and the guy, you know, and the guy getting kind of criticism for what he's been doing. And I understand the fact that maybe there's pieces and there's parts of the team that aren't fitting together. But to see this Boston team improving, I mean, they're getting better. 19 wins at this point in the season is nothing to sneeze at. Yes, maybe they could be a little bit better, but they're still in a rebuilding mode. Milwaukee was in the same, and if not, they still are in the same mode that Boston's in, rebuilding, getting younger, getting better, improving over time. And they're pretty much the same team as Boston. And to see them improving and playing the way they are, it's absolutely fascinating.
Well, I mean, Jason Kidd is doing a pretty respectable job considering, like you said, they don't have a number one. They have a bunch of guys that are, you know, probably third best players on the good team style of guys. They don't really have anybody. I mean, the whole world thought Ersan Ilyasova was going to be the next big thing about 4 years ago, but that was just another contract year bluff. You know, Giannis, he's athletic, he's long. He looks like he's a very exciting player, but you can still see the flaws in his game. He just, you know, he still needs a few more years to physically mature. John Henson, you know, not a bad player. You know, Brandon Knight, you know, he hit a lot of shots, but I just, you know, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying him as some kind of guy that is going to turn into an all-star. I mean, Jared Dudley looked good when he was, you know, surrounded by some decent talent on good teams and in Phoenix and the Clippers, but, you know, like Chris Middleton, I mean, you know, they don't have anything special. I mean, they'll go in the playoffs. They might, you know, win a game or two in the first round, just kind of, you know, kind of like the Celtics would, but then they're no real threat to anybody in the Eastern Conference. The only good thing is, because the top of the Eastern Conference really is pretty weak, including Atlanta, in my opinion, you know, it's one of those things where I also wouldn't be shocked if somehow Milwaukee pulled off an upset against the Cavs or the Bulls or even the Hawks if they played him. So you brought up a point about Marcus Smart. I was discussing on social media earlier with a lot of guys that I talk to on a regular basis, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this. Marcus Smart, to me, has a ceiling, you know, potential ceiling, or, you know, close to it, where I could see him being kind of like a Tony Allen, Jimmy Butler hybrid style player, where he's already got a better jump shot than what Tony Allen had, not only coming out of college, but he already has a better jump shot than Tony Allen fully developed. He doesn't have quite that athletic explosion where he's just going to go up and go over the top of somebody or kind of get that explosive highlight reel dunk, but he's built like a bull. He's 6'4", probably 225. He's just built like an absolute ox. So he's just one of the strongest players on the court. He can guard the one, the two, and the three. And potentially, if he continues to work on his jump shooting, you're going to see him turn into a guy like Jimmy Butler, who was a defensive stopper, earned his keep on the defensive end the first couple of years. But now you look at him, and he's arguably the best player in the Bulls. So, you know, when we talk about Marcus Smart, that's the kind of thing that I can see out of Marcus Smart over the years here as he continues to develop that Tony Allen, Jimmy Butler style player who can go out there, guard the other team's best perimeter player, knock down shots, attack the rim eventually. You know, again, he's not going to be the highlight reel guy, but he's going to be that one guy where you're like, man, this guy's pretty damn good. And he's probably not going to get the credit that he deserves just because he's not playing for, you know, next to LeBron or something. But he's going to sneak up on people, and he's going to be one of those guys in a couple of years where it's like, wow, talk about an all-star snub. Marcus Smart should have been in there with his, you know, 18 points, you know, 5 rebounds, 5 assists style game, you know, and elite level defense. I kind of want your opinion on that aspect, and if there's somebody else that Marcus Smart kind of reminds you of.
You want to know who Marcus Smart reminds me of, just from a pure, just all you got to do is close your eyes and look at how he played at Oklahoma State and the fire that he played at Oklahoma State, which again was only a year ago, but just put Russell Westbrook. It's he's a poor man's Russell Westbrook. He's not as crazy. He's not as obviously. I'm not crazy as in like, but crazy on the court, like, you know, turnover prone, going to attack the hoop at an intense level of, you know, just fire and pure power that Russell Westbrook has. But the ferocity that he brings to the team that he can potentially grow into. I mean, again, he's new. He's a rookie. He's still getting his feet wet. He's getting all these things and all the things you mentioned. I am in 100% agreeance, but I see exactly what you're saying about him. He could definitely be an 18, 20 point per night kind of guy, a guy who can easily get you 5-6 rebounds in his prime once he gets there. But he reminds me a lot of Russell Westbrook. I'm not talking specifically in play style, but just pure athleticism. Give Marcus Smart a couple more years to grow into his body, maybe 3 years to grow into his body, and this guy is going to be the same type of, you know, athleticism. You can't find a player like Russell Westbrook who has that kind of fire, and I don't think Marcus Smart has that kind of fire. In college, he showed signs of it, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. Marcus Smart in college was an absolute monster. So were most of these NBA players. But if he finds his niche and plays similarly to the way he plays at Oklahoma State, you're looking at a poor man's Russell Westbrook and Marcus Smart. And I'm not trying to sit here and say that, you know, Marcus Smart's going to blow up the league and score 45 and have 8 assists and 10 rebounds and have these ridiculous numbers that Russell Westbrook's having. But like you were saying, 18, 20 points a game, 5-6 rebounds, maybe 8 rebounds on occasion. He'll have an occasional 30-point night game. He'll give it to you. And over time, if he develops his game, he might turn into a guy who averages, you know, 22, 23 points, maybe gets you about 5-6, like you said, 5-6, maybe even 7 or 8 rebounds a game. He could turn into that kind of guy. He's definitely more of a scorer than he is more of a passer, a prototypical point guard. The guy, I love the guy. I mean, I was, again, one of those guys where I was like, look, coming into this draft, this guy's more NBA ready than anybody else. I mean, that's another thing real quickly I want to get to about the NBA draft that just bothers the heck out of me. There's all these guys that come into the NBA draft, these players, and again, it's not their fault. They're not the ones that are putting the hype on themselves. It's the media. It's everyone else, or like us, people like us, and giving the praise and giving the ideology that, you know, these guys are going to come in and make an instant impact. We're not going to have a draft like 2007, 2003, 1984, or sorry, 1983, every single freaking year. It's not going to happen. And I think anyone with a common brain cell would know that. You know, Jahlil Okafor, he's probably going to be the number one pick in the draft this year. Guy is not NBA ready. Sorry, guy has a fundamental. He's very fundamental. He can play spurts in the NBA for maybe 3-4 minutes a game, a lot like what Marcus Smart's doing right now, and play solid basketball. But he's going to get out-strengthened, out-handled. The guy is not NBA ready. Oh, just like a lot of these guys coming into the NBA these days, they're not NBA ready. And anyone with a common mind again would look at how NCAA basketball is compared to, you know, the NBA. Obviously, it's a completely different game, but it's not just a completely different game. The body styles, a guy like Jahlil Okafor, the only reason he's being so highly praised is because of his quote unquote potential. Which again, that's a very generic word to say because every draft pick is being praised upon their quote unquote potential. But to the level that Jahlil Okafor has his quote unquote potential being risen, the guy, all he has is footwork. That's it. He's got fantastic footwork. He can rebound. He can do this. He can do that. A guy like Marcus Smart, you knew the moment he came into, you know, especially at the end of his freshman year a couple years ago at Oklahoma State, the moment the guy came into, you know, entered the draft, I you could just see it watching him play. He was head and shoulders above everyone in college, and you knew that if he stepped on an NBA court, you know, near the end of his Oklahoma State career, and he can make an impact for 5-10 minutes a game, which is what he's doing right now in the NBA. You know, and those are the kind of guys that I'm talking about that can improve over time. And that's the thing that bothers me about the draft overall, is that you got guys like, again, you know, guys like Jahlil Okafor, other people where they're saying they're going to be the next big thing, blah, blah, blah. You know, they said that about Victor Oladipo, and Victor Oladipo's been in the league for now 2 years, and the guy hasn't – I mean, he's been okay. He's been pretty good, but he's nothing special. And then you got guys like Tyler Zeller, you know, Cody Zeller, the Zeller brothers. You know, they've come out of college. They've been great players in college. They haven't been anything great. You know, Tyler Hansbrough. You go down the line – there's a ton of guys from college who were just great players, and I mean, they were supposed to do big things in the NBA, and they weren't. But Marcus Smart, again, and I keep pressing this because I agree with you. I think Marcus Smart down the line will be an all-star kind of guy. It's going to take him a while. He's got to grow into his body. I mean, it took LeBron. I mean, LeBron's a whole different category, but let's be honest, LeBron didn't really grow into his body until maybe about 2006, 2007. Which took him about 2-3 years to do. And the guy was, what, 21, 22 when he did it? That's about the age of Marcus Smart. It's going to take him maybe a couple of years to do that as well. But I see this guy as a head-and-shoulders type of player down the road. Not now, because he's clearly young, but you've seen spurts where, as you mentioned tonight, he had a couple of moments where it's like, okay, you know, he puts that together over time, gets some development over the summer. He'll put together a solid 20, 25 minutes of basketball here in the next couple of years, and he might be contributing to, you know, Celtic wins that maybe they would have lost down the stretch, like tonight. You know, you give it a couple years from now, a guy like Marcus Smart might be taking the game-winning shot, unlike a guy like Jay Crowder. And that's no sneeze at Jay Crowder. I think Jay Crowder is actually a pretty solid basketball player. But to see, you know, a guy like Marcus Smart, at how young he is, you can already see just by his physicality and with the way he looks on the court, he looks like he's going to be something special, and it's just going to take him some time. I agree with you on that perspective, that he's going to be one of those kind of guys. That's enough. Again, if you'd like to call in, the phone number is 347-215-7771. And this show is being promoted by lynda.com, CLNS. It's one of those places where you can get consultations on your shows and whatnot. I don't have the information in front of me. If I did, I'd be able to promote it a lot better, but that's just what the way it is. The point is, tonight was, again, 96-93, Brandon Knight, kind of the crucial moment. The Celtics dropped to 19-31. They're now currently about 2.5-3 games out of a potential playoff spot. I was talking about this before we, you know, got on to the topic about Brandon Knight. Marcus Smart. And the one thing that fascinates me about the Eastern Conference and the standings right now, you got Miami, who right now, by the way, would be out of a playoff spot. You know, they're half a game behind. I mean, they're flip-flopping like every day, it seems like. But Charlotte, you know, Brooklyn, Miami, Detroit is, I mean, as Detroit's been crazy. I mean, it's 15 wins since they got rid of Josh Smith about a month and a half ago, which is crazy to think about. They're a completely different team. Boston is hanging around. Also, Indiana's right there with Boston, and they might get their superstar back here in about a month. I don't think he's going to be – I mean, I do another show called the Hooper's Log. It's my own Blog Talk Radio show if you want to listen to that there. I talked about Paul George on Wednesday and how he could potentially come back and impact this Indiana Pacers team and get them into a potential playoff spot. So Indiana all of a sudden finds themselves looking into a potential playoff spot as well. So you got Boston, Indiana, Detroit, Miami, and Brooklyn, and then you got to throw Charlotte in there. That's six teams in the Eastern Conference fighting for the bottom two spots. I want to hear your opinion, Mike Munger, on what you think is going to happen there in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference with about 30-plus games to go in the season.
Well, Charlotte just had the loss of Kemba Walker. So he's their go-to guy. He's the guy that does everything for them in crunch time. He's their number one scorer. So the loss of him, I mean, they've managed to kind of stay afloat right now, you know, and stay in the playoff race. But I don't know how sustainable that is. You know, same thing with Detroit. They looked really great when Josh Smith left, down to reality a little bit here. Brooklyn, I mean, you know, I love Kevin Garnett. I'm always going to have respect for everything that he ever did for when he played for Boston. But at the same time, I just want them to be bad. Yeah, I know we don't get their pick in 2015, but anything that helps them continue to fail is good in my eyes, because if they're bad this year, then they're probably going to be even worse next year. They get all those contracts. I know they're trying to trade them, but they're not going to get anything. You know, they're not going to get any kind of lottery picks for the guys that they have. They're aging vets. So the worse Brooklyn is, the better for me, just because I think that's gonna help us out in the long run too. Indiana's my wild card team. Yeah, I'm glad you brought them up, because if Paul George comes back and they can get into a rhythm with Paul George and sneak in there to the, you know, one of those bottom three seeds, probably the seventh or the eighth seed, a healthy Indiana team will beat whoever's in the one or the two spot in the Eastern Conference. It doesn't matter who it is, outside of maybe Washington. But they'll be a better team than Toronto. I think they'll damn sure kick Indiana's butt, or Atlanta's butt. You know, again, I can give my thoughts on Atlanta another day, another time if necessary. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying the hype. It's a cute story. It really is. It's, you know, they play great team basketball, but they're pretenders. They're in no way, shape, or form the actual, you know, the number one contender for the NBA championship, in my opinion. They just don't have it. Come playoff time, it's a whole different monster. And if they get stuck playing a team like Indiana with Paul George back, kind of getting into that rhythm where he's finally getting his legs under him, look out, because then I think Indiana's going to go on a run.
Speaking of pretenders, real quick, you brought up a good point about Atlanta being a pretender. You know, it's crazy because I was in the exact same boat you are right now, and I have slowly been. I am still flip flopping between which boat I want to jump into. I either want to say Atlanta's for real or Atlanta's not, and I agree with you. It's a really cute story saying that Atlanta's, you know, 42-9. They're playing lights out basketball right now, and they've been playing great basketball since Thanksgiving. And I agree with you. I still think that Atlanta has a lot to prove come postseason. You know, it's almost like saying they've got the chariot out in front of the horse right now. That they're basically ahead of their own self right now. Atlanta is not a team that, you know, especially if you really just want to break it down just size wise, Atlanta doesn't have the guys to match up with. You know, let's say Detroit gets in as an 8 seed. I could easily see Detroit destroying Atlanta in a 7-game series. Why? Because Detroit has a guy in Andre Drummond who's way bigger and stronger than both those big men down low in Atlanta. Greg Monroe is fundamentally sound and one of the best big men if he gets it going. And obviously Brandon Jennings, when he's healthy, can stop Jeff Teague on a dime. So for that, it is a whole different beast. And again, Detroit is a whole different team all by themselves. And again, though, but if you really think about it, outside of, like you said, Washington, because I still like the way Washington is set up and the way their team is put together, outside of maybe Washington, Chicago, I don't even know of Chicago, because Chicago's been so inconsistent all year, and obviously Cleveland, they've won, I don't know, 12 games in a row, or 12 of their last 13. You know, there really aren't that many solid, I guess, contending teams in the Eastern Conference, because honestly, considering that the last 4 years, I mean, you got to think about it this way. What LeBron did when he was in Miami, he really kind of just sideswiped the entire Eastern Conference. Because let's be honest, when you're covering the Eastern Conference on a nightly basis for the last 4 years, and all you see is the megatrain of the Miami Heat and Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh, you kind of already assume, and you have that in the back of your mind, outside of maybe in Indiana, that those are the only real two teams coming out of the East for the last 2-3 years. And you're sitting there, and now you're thinking, well, now LeBron's out of Miami. Miami is hovering around maybe even not getting into the postseason. And all these other teams, Chicago has had Derrick Rose gone for 2 years. Cleveland finally got, you know, LeBron back. And they have a whole bunch of guys who are unproven, and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. They're superstars, but don't get me wrong, they haven't proved anything on a big stage. And then you got Toronto, who last year took Brooklyn to 7 games. They haven't proven that they can contend deep in a postseason run. Atlanta, I mean, so all these teams now that are that are being exposed for their weaknesses. All of them have weaknesses. Atlanta's got a weakness because they, yes, they've been playing great basketball as of late, but their size is going to be a huge factor in the postseason. They don't have a necessarily go-to guy, really. They have a whole bunch of guys that have maybe one or two good moves, but outside of that, they don't have any, like, they're not any superstars on that team. Toronto, Kyle Lowry. I mean, think about this. Kyle Lowry, this is his first year as an all-star. This guy isn't a, you know, set in stone type player. Kyle Lowry's kind of built like Marcus Smart. Let's be honest. I mean, Marcus Smart doesn't have the awareness, doesn't have the wherewithal that maybe Kyle Lowry has through his experience. But Kyle Lowry is an all-star, but he had to work his tail off to get there. DeMar DeRozan is great, all that, but they haven't proven anything. Washington hasn't proven anything yet either, although they're kind of – so you see what I'm saying with where the Miami Heat really kind of sideswiped the entire Eastern Conference over the last 3 or 4 years, where we've looked at the Eastern Conference and just been like, oh, Miami will be there at the end. Oh, Miami will be – every year. And now we're coming into this year, and, you know, we don't think Atlanta's for real. We don't think, you know, Toronto has a chance. We think Washington has a chance. Everyone, I mean, again, this depends on who you talk to, thinks that Chicago has the tools to make a championship run, which I believe could happen. Sorry for that. My phone skips every once in a while. Cleveland has a opportunity if all their pieces come aligned, which they have as of recently. They have a chance to make themselves look for real. And then you got the bottom three in Milwaukee, Charlotte, or now they're hurt, but Milwaukee's obviously young and they're nowhere near a playoff contending team. So in reality, in the Eastern Conference, there's really not a bunch of solidified teams outside of maybe a healthy and clicking on all cylinders Chicago, which we haven't really seen that much this year. So when it comes to a team that's for real in the Eastern Conference, who do you really see coming out of the East? I mean, in all reality, who are your, like, four teams that you might look at in the Eastern Conference and say they got a shot at representing come June?
Well, I still think when it comes down to it, I think the favorites in the East are Chicago, Washington. You know, not that I think they're going to win the championship, but I think just based off of star power, somehow Cleveland will find a way to get in there. And honestly, at the beginning of the season, I would have given a lot more respect to a healthy Charlotte team, but, you know, like, again, with the injuries they've had, I don't see it. So, I mean, I guess Toronto can kind of sneak in there. I think they'll have the path of least resistance, at least for the first round. So, I don't know. I mean, I think Chicago and Washington are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference when everybody's completely healthy. I like the way they're built. I do. I mean, yeah, I still think that, you know, I don't think John Wall is quite there yet as a go-to guy, but I think they have enough guys that can be the go-to guy in that clutch moment. Obviously, with Paul Pierce there, I mean, the guy's an absolute legend in the fourth quarter. I like Bradley Beal. I think Nene and Gortat as a front quarter, absolutely devastating come playoff time. And then obviously Chicago, I mean, Thibs has, it doesn't matter who's out there, he has those guys just playing balls to the wall the whole time. With Noah, the addition of Gasol looks good. The aforementioned Jimmy Butler is their best player. And if Rose can kind of check the ego at the door and realize that he's not the MVP Rose he was a few years ago, but just kind of go out there and just be a cog. I kind of like how Chicago's put together. So, I mean, realistically, Chicago and Washington are the two teams. Cleveland, you know, probably sneak in there in the Eastern Conference semifinals, and, you know, maybe Toronto, I guess. I just, you know, again, I'm not sold on Atlanta. I just don't see it continuing. I think those are the four teams right there that'll probably end up representing the East one way or another, with Chicago and Washington being the most likely candidates to come out of the East.
Yeah, it's really a toss-up this year in the East because, again, like I've said a lot, I mean, you don't need to be a brain surgeon to see that the last 4 years the Miami Heat have represented. And outside of that, you know, the last team to represent the Eastern Conference was the Boston Celtics in 2010. I mean, ever since then, you really don't have – much of a debate in the East on who you think was going to come in, but this year it's a whole different story. With no real powerhouse in the East. I mean, yeah, Atlanta's made a great run, and I do like the asset, because that's the most interesting thing about this Washington Wizards team this year. Yeah, they have one of the best backcourts in the Eastern Conference, probably. I mean, unless Chicago's fully healthy, they probably do have the best backcourt, because John Wall's has his identity down as a player now, and obviously Bradley Beal is, when he's healthy, he's one of the best sharpshooters in the NBA, and also a pretty solid player by himself. They got Gortat, they got Nene, and then, like you said, Paul Pierce. And the funny thing about Paul Pierce is, obviously, he is dwindling down and on crutches in the NBA. But come postseason time, as we saw last year, the guy can still play at a high level when he wants to. And I'm not saying he doesn't on a nightly basis, because he's not going to, because he's just not that kind of player anymore. But you give him a couple nights in April and May, and this guy can get you to June. And that's just what he's built for. And come postseason time, he's going to be the go-to guy come the last 2-3 minutes of a ball game. And when John Wall and Bradley Beal's shots aren't hitting, you're going to have a guy like Paul Pierce waiting in the wings, and he's going to cover the spread like butter on bread. He's going to cover that bread, and he's going to make it that much better than it was before. So that's what Paul Pierce has for the Washington Wizards, which, again, fascinating stuff to me, because no one's talking about Paul Pierce, and I always forget about Paul Pierce being on Washington. I mean, I'm here on a CLNS, you know, Boston Celtics postgame show, and I keep forgetting that a guy like Paul Pierce is on Washington, because ever since he's left Boston, I really have forgotten that he's even, you know, in the league still, to be honest. But when he does perform, he puts on a show, and he still does it from time to time at Washington. But come the postseason, that's really what he's built for. And we saw that here in Boston, you know, back in 08 and 09 and 10 and 11. We saw that. And the guy is just known for his clutch performances. Speaking of the standings, I mean, this will get away from the Eastern Conference for a bit. They're talking about realignment. I know this is a Boston Celtics postgame show. Again, if you'd like to call in and talk about the game, the phone number is 347-215-7771. If you'd like to call in and talk the Boston Celtics game tonight. Again, game-winning shot by Brandon Knight. Fade away from the left elbow, just past the left elbow, to win the game with about 6 seconds left in the game. Jay Crowder had a shot at the end that, I mean, the play wasn't actually a bad play, but he was guarded heavily in the corner, and that made it a difficult shot there at the end. But we're talking standings and situations in the NBA real quick. We'll probably wrap up the show here shortly in about maybe 10, 15 minutes. Not much to talk about here on the Celtics postgame show. But if you'd like to call in and talk about the game, again, 347-215-7771. Mike, the craziest thing about this game, in the Western Conference, I mean, we've been talking about the East, obviously, because, you know, Boston Celtics postgame show. But the thing about the NBA now is, as we've said, in the Eastern Conference, there isn't really a solidified team in the East that you can make the case that is a favorite in the East to win it all, to get into the NBA Finals, not win it all in the Finals, but win it all in the East. The Western Conference is the exact opposite. It's not the exact opposite from there's no favorite. There's still no favorite in the West, but it's from a different angle. It's from the angle of, well, I could see this team winning the title. Well, I could see this team win. I could see this. So from the Western Conference side, I mean, you got Golden State. I am on the same level as you when it comes to the Atlanta Hawks and how you're not on the bandwagon with Atlanta and how you think they're playing. I see Golden State it's the same exact way. They're a very, very fun team to watch in the regular season. They shoot threes all day. They make themselves open. They're entertaining to watch. Steph Curry's a fun little sidekick. He just seems like a little sidekick guy to me. I mean, even though he's a star player on that team, he looks like a little sidekick running around the court, shooting threes within the span of like half a second when he lets it from his hands. But outside of that, you know, Memphis is really scary. They're a team that has been silent all year. You know, they've won 8 of their last 10 games. They have been unbelievable this year, and they have been silent amongst the entire season. They're the third best team in the NBA. Houston, they got the front runner, in my opinion, in the MVP in James Harden. That guy has been absolutely a beast this year. Portland's kind of dropped off a little bit, but they're still there. Dallas, obviously Rondo's been hurt for a while, so they're off, and the Clippers are a lot like Golden State, San Antonio, and then you got Phoenix, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City are right there. They're, like, legitimately, if Oklahoma City steps into that eighth seed, I honestly don't know who's going to come out of the Western Conference because of the parity at a higher level in the West. I mean, I could see Memphis representing the West. I could see Houston representing the West. If San Antonio picks it up a little bit here, I could see San Antonio repeating and getting another NBA championship. Also, Oklahoma City, if they fire it up in the second half and play the way we know they can, this team will be the scariest eighth seed team probably in the history of the NBA. So what do you see coming out of the Western Conference there? Knowing that we talked about the Eastern Conference, but what do you see coming out of the Western Conference there in the playoffs?
Well, first off, anytime that we talk about the Western Conference, I just want to get this out there, and because, you know, I'm going to assume I'm a lot older than you, being 37, a little more old school. Seeing the Lakers mm-hmm. second to last in the Western Conference is a thing of beauty to old school stuff. Because, I go way back to the point where I despise the Lakers. I won't let my children wear purple and yellow together. So seeing the Lakers absolutely suck, knowing that they have not only no present but no future to work around, is a beautiful thing. But with regards to your question, listen, if you were to poll most average NBA fans as to who the top teams in the West are, Memphis, they probably wouldn't even think of Memphis just because they're not a sexy team. They're not one of those teams where you sit there and think, oh, man, this is a highlight reel waiting to happen. But defensively, you look at it, they only give up 95.9 points per game in this NBA where they do everything that's geared towards offense. And if I remember correctly, it looks like that's the number one defense in the NBA, and they still score over 100 points. So Memphis is a team where I would not be shocked one bit if they represented the West in the NBA Finals, and I also would not be shocked if they won the NBA Finals, just because the Jeff Green pickup was an absolute thing of genius. Kind of putting him down there in that perimeter defensively with Mike Conley and Courtney Lee, then also having the big man Gasol in the middle, while not only giving Memphis a shot in the arm offensively, because we all know how good Jeff Green can be offensively when he doesn't have to worry about playing under the pressure of being the number one go-to guy, which he does in Memphis. I think Memphis is the favorite to come out of the West just because we've all seen in the playoffs, again, offense is cute, offense is fun, it wins you a lot of video games, and it's what the little kids like to see and all the casual fans like to see. But in a seven-game series, I'll take Memphis over Golden State. I'll take Memphis over Houston. I'll take Memphis over Portland, the Clippers. You know, defensively, I think that's where they're going to make their money. I could just see it. I mean, if I were to pick the three teams to come out of the West right now that I could see being legitimate contenders and probably winning the championship, Memphis is my first team. Dallas is my second team, just because, again, when he comes back, I think the addition of Rondo giving them a legitimate pass-first point guard to go with the offensive talent they have makes them legitimate contenders now. And obviously, I'm never in my life I'm going to doubt San Antonio. I mean, they're 32-18, 640 winning percentage. They're in seventh place in the West, and I guarantee you there isn't a single team in the West that wants to play them in the first round. So those are the three teams right there. I think the Clippers are fraudulent. They're soft. While I kind of feel for Chris Paul and what he went through the other night with that referee, I just don't like him. They're that Hollywood team that thinks they're owed something because they're big time without actually having to go out there and earn it. Their stars are soft. Their fans are soft. The toughest guy on the team is their coach. Let's just be real. Phoenix, you know, again, good story. Jeff Hornacek is, you know, he looks like a legitimate coach here. But, I mean, just look at the makeup of their team. I mean, defensively, they can't guard a chair. Dragic, good offensive point guard, can't play defense. Isaiah Thomas, he can score, can't play defense. You know, Eric Bledsoe, I mean, this guy was supposed to be the next up-and-coming superstar, and he just kind of faded into obscurity here. So, excuse me about that.
Yeah.
Live radio, just every now and then you cough. So my pick out of the West again, Memphis, Dallas, San Antonio, and not for nothing, but it would please me to no end to see Oklahoma City not only not make the playoffs, but split up, because I feel for Kevin Durant. The guy's the best player in the league, hands down. But for him to get stuck playing with a selfish, ball-hogging, not realizing he's not the alpha dog jacker like Russell Westbrook, it just kind of breaks my heart a little bit. I'd love to see Russell Westbrook get traded, bring in a better actual point guard to play with Durant and let him move forward without him. Or, you know what, 2016, Durant can come to Boston.
If Kevin Durant comes to Boston, that would be absolutely insane. You know what I think is actually going to happen with Oklahoma City? First of all, I've been a Spurs fan for as long as, you know, I've been born. I was born in San Antonio and all that. And, you know, I can relate to you and the Laker hatred. Point four, still stuck in my memory as a kid. Other things that, you know, obviously in the dynasty that they had, it seemed like every single year they knocked off the Spurs. Obviously, you know, couple times, 2009 when we lost the Western Conference Finals to the Lakers, that was absolutely rough, because you knew we were going to destroy Orlando if we won. But that was, yeah, the Lakers, I'm very happy to see them struggling as well. Management-wise, it's tough to see what they're going through, but on the court, it's lovely because they've been absolutely horrible. The thing that you mentioned about Memphis, about Memphis being a favorite, I actually like them. The thing, Memphis is a lot like Washington to me, and I'm not trying to say, like, you know, Washington and Memphis are the same. I think Memphis would destroy Washington in a seven game series, excuse me. But I think at the same time, Memphis has a lot to prove. They're one of those teams that I agree, defensively, fantastic. Big man wise, probably the best big man combo in the NBA. They are the best big man combo in the NBA. And they can match anyone. And, you know, Mike Conley is one of the most underrated players in all of the NBA by far. And they just have a lot to prove when it comes to the postseason. The last time they made a major postseason run was a couple years ago when they played the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals, and they got their doors blown off by the Spurs. The Spurs just absolutely found mismatches against them and just exploited it to no end. Tim Duncan got down low and manhandled Zach Randolph, because Zach Randolph is a pretty physical guy down low, but Timmy, with his fundamentals, can do what he can do and just absolutely dominate. And the scary thing, like you said about the San Antonio Spurs, they're only 32-8. The seventh seed in the West. The scary thing is this team can wake up like a sleeping giant and just come out in the second half. And if everyone's healthy, they can come out, win 8 in a row, get up to that number 3-4 spot in the 2-3-4 spot in the Western Conference. And like you said, they could just easily find themselves in the top 4 positioning in the Western Conference, get hot at the right time, put another run together and win a championship. And it's crazy because these old guys just keep coming back out of nowhere to keep doing what they're doing. And it's mind-boggling to think that, you know, here, again, as a Spurs fan, I'm a little bit biased, but back in 08, 09, when I saw this window, I thought the window was closed after we lost to Memphis in 2010. I thought it was done. Or 2011. I thought the window had completely closed when we were the one seed and we lost to Memphis in the eighth seed. I thought, that's it. We're going to have to split up the big three. That's going to have to, you know, we're going to have to completely reinvent ourselves and everything's going to have to change. That was not the case. Pop found a way to fix the team, fix everything in and of itself to get the team, you know, situated to make sure that the old guys get their rest during the season, along with playing good basketball come late. And then obviously come playoff time, they're revitalized, refreshed, and they can come out and perform at a high level. Oklahoma City, and this is what I think is going to happen with Oklahoma City. I live out here in the Pacific Northwest, for those of you that don't know and who are listening for the first time, and seeing what happened to the Sonics. I watched the Sonics growing up. I was a Spurs fan, but I watched the Sonics growing up as well. Seeing what happened to that city and seeing how they got their team completely taken away from them in Seattle, absolute travesty in the NBA. And for my money, I agree with you. I would love to see Oklahoma City get shut out of the playoffs and see Kevin Durant split, see Russell Westbrook, and see this team turn into a bunch of nobodies, because that's what Oklahoma City deserves. They deserve to be a trashy organization for the next 30 years. I hope they turn into a Minnesota Timberwolves. I hope they turn into the Philadelphia 76ers, the New York Knicks. I hope they turn into that, because they don't deserve any sort of respect whatsoever. This organization is scum. I mean, at least upper management-wise, the guys on the court's a different story, but the guys on the upper management are all scum. They don't know the definition of class. They don't get it, and they don't care, because all they want to do is get a team to Oklahoma City. Well, you know, obviously the two superstars have been injured. They've slowly been pecked away on the bench. You know, James Harden left after 2012. Thabo Sefolosha's left after, like, 2013. This team's slowly pecking away, and the rumor has it that Kevin Durant, since he's from Washington, D.C., that he wants to either become a Toronto Raptor, because that was his favorite team growing up, or be a Wizard. And can you imagine if Kevin Durant joined that current Washington Wizards team? And I know Paul Pierce probably wouldn't be a factor, because he's probably going to hang him up very shortly. But can you imagine John Wall, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Marcin Gortat, and Nene? That's a championship right there. Like, you have to win a championship with that roster. And that could potentially happen. Now, if Kevin Durant went to Boston, that would make them a championship contending, I think, automatically, because Boston, as a lot of people, I think, are aware of, they don't have any, obviously, they don't have any superstars on that team, but they have a lot of guys that they can build around if they grab a superstar. So if a guy like Kevin Durant did come to Boston, you can tell, you could easily put this team at 45, 50 wins, because everyone on that team is relatively similar in the way they play. I mean, I'm not trying to say that everyone's the same in Boston, but the way that team plays, they all play as a collective unit. They just don't have a go-to guy where they know that they can get points from, a guy that they can build around. They don't have a guy that they can build around right now, but they have the pieces in place to get them to become a great team, basketball team, which is what Brad Stevens wants. But at the end of the day, in the NBA, you still got to have a guy, a go-to guy. I mean, all these teams in the postseason race right now, they all got go-to guys. Atlanta's got, you know, I don't know if they necessarily have a go-to guy, but they definitely have two big men that they can go to down low in the paint and get some moves for. Golden State, Steph Curry, Splash Brothers, Memphis, big men down low. Houston, James Harden, you just name them off, and all these guys have go-to guys. Boston doesn't have that. And if they did get a guy like Kevin Durant, that would be absolutely incredible. Now, the rumor is, and this is what I've been hearing from, you know, people on the West Coast, is that Russell Westbrook, potentially, when his contract is up or in the future or whatever, I don't know when it's going to be, but I've heard that he could potentially go to Los Angeles Lakers. Can you imagine how much more beautiful would that be to see a guy in Oklahoma City once, obviously, Kobe Bryant retires, which needs to be right now, because let's be honest, Kobe needs to be done. He's got a torn rotator cuff, another 9 months of rehab, like 18 months of rehab overall. The guy needs to just hang him up. He's done. One of the greatest players of all time, needs to hang him up. But wouldn't it be absolutely lovely to watch a guy like Russell Westbrook go back home to Los Angeles, play for the Lakers, and absolutely run that organization into the ground, because the upper organization part of it, you know, with the Buss family and their situation and them struggling, and then also having a guy like Russell Westbrook be the superstar. You talk about a team that would literally win like 15 games a year and have one rampaging bull scoring 50 points a game and losing every single week, every single night. That's exactly what the Lakers would turn into. And it wouldn't shock me if that's what turned into the Lakers. I mean, I want the Lakers to succeed, because if the Lakers succeed, the NBA succeeds more in the financial portion of it. But they're looking like that could potentially happen. And Oklahoma City, before we know it, in the next couple of years, they could completely split up. And so living out here in the Pacific Northwest, I don't think anyone would have any argument with seeing an Oklahoma City team just absolutely fall flat on their face and lose 50 games a year coming up here in the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, you know, while, like I said, I brought up Durant to Boston, here's what I think the realistic thing is going to happen. I could see Westbrook leaving because he thinks he's the man. He wants his own team. I would love to see him go ruin the Lakers. I think Durant saw what happened with LeBron when he left Cleveland. So I could actually see Durant staying in Oklahoma City and then, you know, continually building a contender around him, keeping guys around him that could keep him on top. you know, bring them a potential championship. So that's what I can see happening there. The Lakers, look, I could care less if the Lakers are good or not financially. I don't care. I mean, personally, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Lakers are great. Just started to become good again when Stern came in, and they're starting to suck again when Stern's walking out the door. But that's my opinion for another day. But, you know, I as far as free agents for the Celtics going a couple of years, you're right, we don't have the go-to guy. I mean, you don't know if we don't have that guy on the roster right now. There's no telling whether or not James Young or Marcus Smart or, you know, maybe Avery Bradley in a year or two can't develop into that kind of guy. You don't know what's going to happen. You never know what kind of player these guys are going to turn into. You don't know if we're going to draft it. Or you don't know if, you know, like I said, free agency, or if you're going to sign some guy, you know, or trade for some guy with all the draft picks we have, because it's, you know, some pretty big free agents coming up here soon. So, you know, it'll be interesting over these next few years. The Celtics are in a great position right now moving forward. We're not going to be the Atlanta Hawks part two, where we have a good team with a good coach and a good system, but we're not a contender because we won't have a go-to guy. Danny Ainge is a savvy guy. He's going to get a lot of stuff done, and I trust in Danny Ainge right now.
Yeah, I feel like the Celtics are on a path to improve as an organization. I don't disagree with that at all. I think that the Celtics are going to be fine. But unfortunately tonight, they went down 96-93 to an absolute bucket from Brandon Knight. As the Boston Celtics go down, they're now 19-31 on the season. 32 games left to go. They still got a shot at the postseason. We're going to get off the air here, Mike. It was fantastic. Hopefully we can do this again soon. It was good talking to you, man.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I will always forever hate David Stern. I blame him for everything. The refs are absolutely terrible. I despise Evan Turner. But I love the Celtics. I love talking about them. I love doing this. And it's a pleasure working with you. And look forward to doing it again in the future. And I appreciate everybody that listens to CLNS on a daily basis and contributes and helps us continue to grow into the best online radio network there is on the interweb. So, you know, I appreciate everything everybody does. And go Celtics.
Definitely. Go Celtics. Have a fantastic night, everybody. Hope you can swallow this one and get on your merry way. Have a great night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.